From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Robert Sutton, who's a professor of organizational behavior at Stanford, wrote a book a few years ago. Some of you might remember for the title. It was called The No A-Hole Rule. He didn't use the word a-hole. I'm holding back on the actual word for a moment, as you can tell. The book was about how you build a jerk-free culture around yourself. And he figured it would strike a chord for a while and then fade out. But it hasn't. People continue to send Sutton emails and letters and notes about the a-holes they encounter. So he's dug into the research and the anecdotes and the theories, and he's written a survival guide. He says it's the best advice he can muster about how you deal with the people who leave you feeling demeaned and oppressed. You know, the a-holes. Robert Sutton will join us today. We hope you will too, after the news.
They say all politics is local, and KUER reporters are here to bring you Utah stories, news that affects you here at home, like public lands and water issues, religion, and the tech boom. You can trust KUER to bring you the facts and thoughtful analysis of why the story matters. Listen to KUER on air at 90.1, stream us at KUER.org, and here's a pro tip. If you've got a smart speaker, tell it you want to listen to NPR, and Alexa or Google will take you right there.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Maybe you have somebody in your life, in your office maybe, or in your social circle who is just an insufferable bully, cartoonishly insensitive, and just downright mean. The word you use when you're talking to your friends about this person isn't usually jerk. It's a good word, but it doesn't quite do it for this guy. It's pretty bad. No, there's usually another word you use, and it's a word that you may not want to hear on the radio, or you may not want your kids to hear, at least not right now. So I'm providing fair warning that throughout the program today, we're going to use the word because Stanford professor Robert Sutton says it may be the best word to describe this person. So here's your chance to jump out. The word is asshole. And Sutton says you may be surprised about how much the assholes of the world are costing us in reduced trust, in productivity, in creativity, in innovation, in emotional well-being. Assholes can even affect your physical health. Robert Sutton has a book where he diagnoses asshole behavior and then provides strategies for dealing with them, outwitting them, and not becoming one yourself. Turns out treating people like dirt is contagious. The book is called The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. Robert Sutton is an organizational psychologist at Stanford University. He's published over 150 scholarly articles written for The New York Times, The Financial Times, and Wall Street Journal. He's joining us today from the studios of the Stanford campus in California. And Professor Sutton, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Doug.
So, Professor Sutton, I want to begin with the word itself because I want to get this out of the way. It's a word I feel like you should be able to use on the radio, though I always feel like if you give people fair warning and sufficient time to get the kids out of the room, you know, people are grown-ups, they can handle certain strong words. So that's kind of what we've done. I hope that's enough. You've written about how frustrating it is to waste time on that particular word. So what do you want to say about that? Let's get this out of the way.
Well, the reason that I use the word asshole is, at least for me, when I treat people badly, I leave other people feeling like dirt. The self-censoring mechanism I use to myself is I don't say, Bob, you've been bad. Yeah. I say to myself, you've been an asshole. Yeah. And when I see somebody treat others like dirt, there's other synonyms for it. I don't jerk, bully, and so on. A tormentor, and I'll use those interchangeably. But emotionally, that's the word that I go to. And different languages have similar different words. So in Italian, apparently it's stronzi. So there's something that the way that I've been raised, and apparently I am not alone in this matter.
Yeah.
So I thought it was more emotionally honest to use the word.
I have to say, when you're on book tour, it must make it complicated, especially when you're
but
talking
on
the radio.
It's also funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of my favorite, one of the Bay Area announcers, he couldn't use it on the air, and he says, it starts with an A and it rhymes with castle. I thought that was pretty clever. So at least you can have fun with it.
I think a-hole is interesting because we were thinking about that too. Like, oh, we'll just say a-hole. But you've said that doesn't really make any sense. If you just take out the SS, somehow that makes it less potent or something?
I don't know. It makes people feel better.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah. But at least it makes some people who are uptight but want to use the word better. But to me, the most important thing, though, is whatever you call it, is that there are people in the world who leave others feeling like dirt. And as you said in your introductory remarks, the amount of evidence, and I'm talking 200,000 studies in academic journals since 2007 when I wrote the last book, the amount of evidence that they make you sick, they drive out people, they undermine productivity, it's just kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
So if you've got people like that in your life, and I especially focus on the workplace,
right,
you've got a problem, you've got to protect yourself and deal with it somehow.
The book you mentioned before, some people may be familiar with, it's The No Asshole Rule, which immensely popular as a book. This was now 10 years ago. It's surprising that it's been so long ago. But you say right up front that you thought when you wrote that book that this was going to be something that, you know, people maybe paid some attention to, then it would fade out. But it hasn't. I mean, it's still – you get asked about assholes all the time.
All the time, yeah. And I get asked to oversimplify in two ways. One is the theme of the No Asshole Rule was more on how to build a relatively jerk-free culture.
Yep.
And that's a problem for lots of organizations out here in the Bay Area. Uber really, for example, is struggling with that, both to reduce sexism and generally abusive environment. And then the other part, which is the part that really drove the Asshole Survival Guide, is I thought I was writing a book about organizational culture. But everywhere I've gone in the last decade, even though I'm supposed to be doing work on other stuff, mm-hmm. people essentially tell me the same kind of story in everything from CEOs who talk about board holes or douche boards.
Yep.
I wonder if we can use that.
Yeah.
And versus Costco workers versus lawyers, a lot of people in the clergy talking about parishioners who are jerks,
mm-hmm.
that they're essentially asking me the same question, which is, I'm dealing with a jerk or a bunch of them. What do I do?
Yeah.
And so that's the question that I've tried to tackle in this new book.
So what's the question? What do I do? Can you help me? Can you give me some strategies for dealing with this?
Well, my motto here is, I guess we can say it here, is know your asshole and know yourself, I guess. I wish there was a one-size-fits-all solution, but there's at least two or three things you got to consider. The first one, and one of the most important ones, is the person who's leaving you feel bad about yourself, is that person a temporary or what I call a certified a-hole? Mm-hmm. So if somebody's just mm-hmm. having a bad day,
yep.
You kind of got to give them some slack. I mean, we all are capable of being jerks under bad conditions. But if it's somebody who's all a-hole all the time, so that's one thing you got to keep in mind. The second thing is, are you dealing with one? If you're dealing with one, you can kind of avoid them and move around him, or are you in a Lord of the Flies situation where it's, you know, you're living in Jerk City and everywhere you go, yeah, everybody yeah. treats one another like dirt? If you're in a situation like that, well, one is that you probably should get out. But even if you can't get out, you're probably going to turn into one yourself. As you said, it's quite contagious.
Yeah.
And then the third thing, and it's a word that you know, people are a little uncomfortable with sometimes, but the amount of power you have in the situation is very important. Because if you're the boss, and I have examples in the book. One is a financial services company called Baird. That's they're international, but they're located out of Milwaukee. They have a no asshole rule,
mm-hmm.
and the CEO tells people that if they act like jerks, he's going to fire them, and he does. So
right.
it's great to be king or queen if you can fire them. But for most of us, we don't have that much power. And if we're dealing especially with a more powerful person or a colleague, you got to be more strategic. You got to be a little bit more careful. So
yeah.
those three things, temporary versus certified, how much power I have and whether I'm dealing with one or many, you at least got to start there to try to figure out how you're going to navigate around the situation.
I think this caveat that you mention in the book, and it comes up kind of as a theme, is important mm-hmm. to state right up front, this mantra, which you say we should all adopt: be slow to label others as assholes, be quick to label yourself as one.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because when I wrote the first book, I sort of had this standard approach, which I see over the literature, which is I'm the good person
yep.
and the other people are the bad people.
Right.
But if you look at research, sometimes psychologists call this self-serving biases and other terms. But essentially, most of us tend to underestimate the bad things we do and to blame others excessively for the bad things that happen in our life. So just as sort of a leavening or a bias correction of some kind, being slow to label others and say, gee, is there something about me that I'm overly thin-skinned? Is there something about this person that sets me off? Mm-hmm. And then also having some empathy for the person and saying, well, he or she might be ignoring me, might be glaring at me in some ways. But, you know, maybe they're just having a bad day and maybe the person isn't an all-around jerk. And to me, that's a place to start. Right. And, to sort of quickly add the end, there are people in life who treat us like dirt, who deserve to be called certified a-holes. But being a little bit slow is important. And also, to your point, labeling yourself is important because one of the most reliable way, and I talk to people like this, and they send me notes, like, everywhere I go, people treat me like dirt. Well, one reason you might be treated like dirt everywhere you go is one of the most reliable ways to provoke asshole behavior is to treat people badly yourself.
Right.
So they just might be throwing it back at you.
Yeah.
So while I talk about strategies for dealing with jerks, I think it's an important, as you say, sort of proviso.
Before we get to some of the strategies, I want to ask a little bit about, talk a little bit about just this impression I think a lot of people hold that you have to be an asshole to get someplace, to be successful, or that the people who have succeeded are assholes. So maybe there's something to it. It's a theory that some people think works, but you've sort of looked into it. And you don't think it really applies.
Well, so I'll be specific.
Apply. Yeah.
There's one time when it actually may work.
Yeah.
And it's an important time, which is that if you are in a situation where it's a zero-sum game, where it's I win, you lose. And by the way, politics is like this sometimes.
Yeah.
And your whole goal is to crush the competition and sit on top of them. It's fine. But any situation where you need cooperation or collaboration, it doesn't work. Because what happens is, in leadership is a perfect example, sometimes organizations will have very competitive games where people try to get to the top. And in the process, they actually destroy the organization that they're trying to lead because they're driving out the best people. They're undermining productivity. They're making them sick. And so the evidence generally is that when you look at long-term, for example, CEO performance, mm-hmm. ones who are more cooperative and more collaborative do better. And I'd also point out to your listeners that when you look at the list of people who are very successful in our collaborative, it's actually very long and pretty easy to get through. So Warren Buffett's a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
Famous for being collaborative and cooperative. Mark Zuckerberg, sometimes he gets bashed in Hollywood movies, but he's actually a very collaborative, very cooperative person who's giving away 95% of his wealth. Mm-hmm. And the list just goes on and on of people who are civilized. Tim Cook, Jobs was sort of infamous and probably overly blamed for being nasty, but that anybody who knows or has worked with Tim Cook, the new CEO, perfectly civilized guy.
Yeah.
So
Shonda Rhimes, I mean, there's a whole list.
Shonda Rhimes,
yeah.
is a really good example. So it is possible to be a successful person and to be a successful leader and entrepreneur without being a jerk. And another one of my mantras is that if you're a winner and you're an asshole, you're still a loser in my book,
right?
because of the dirt that you've done. And you can kind of, you know, your listeners who are basketball fans, you can kind of compare Bobby Knight. Okay, he won a lot of basketball games, but he sure did a lot of damage.
Yep.
And then there's somebody like Coach K, who's a perfectly reasonable person and is successful.
Right.
So it is possible to do both.
I think you had this conversation with Ed Catmull, the founder of Pixar, about Steve Jobs, which I found was interesting because Catmull said to you that, yes, Jobs was once an overbearing jerk, and he maybe even could be later. Mm-hmm. There's a story you tell about one particular engineer at Apple who just avoided getting in the elevator with him because he was so intense. But but he had this experience where after he got fired from that first company, he sort of changed. And I wondered if there was a theme there, having an experience that turns people potentially from being an asshole into something else.
Yeah. Some people get worse with age, but some right. of us, hopefully not everybody gets better.
Yeah.
But I think some people have experiences that teach them that acting that way just doesn't work. And the argument that Catmull made to me, and Catmull's lovely guy, still heads both Pixar and Disney Animation Studios, is that his experience with Jobs was after, as you say, he was pushed out of Apple and he failed at another company called Next, that he was still tough. I mean, that's the other thing, is I'm not making an argument for nice guy about being nice or about being a doormat. My argument is I'm talking about treating people with respect, even if you have to do tough things like give them negative feedback or fire them. But apparently, from at least Ed Catmull's report, that he became a much more civilized, much more cooperative person after he wandered in the wilderness, and he might actually still been awfully tough, but at least he became less nasty, if you will.
Yeah.
So,
I know it's hard to measure this stuff, but what do you figure are the costs of assholes to organizations?
There's various people who come up with academics, like they'll try to put together estimates like $20 billion a year is the cost caused by abusive supervision. But if you start piling up from the studies, you can find pretty specific effects. One of my favorite studies was done in fast food restaurants. So what they did was look to see if fast food restaurants were led by an abusive supervisor or not, essentially. And ones that had an abusive supervisor had much higher levels of stolen food and wasted food. So you see studies like that. You see studies about turnover. A lot of evidence that when you treat people like dirt, not only will you lose employees, you will lose your best employees. So the turnover costs are very high, sick days, sleep problems. So there's various ways to estimate it. In my old book, I actually had an example of a really abusive, he was kind of a software salesperson. We have a lot of these like software salespeople out here who sell very expensive softwares to companies. And HR got really mad at him. His name was Ethan, and they calculated the cost of all the assistance he went through, wow. his legal bills, the bullying, and it was something like $350,000 was his, called the TCA, total cost of asshole, for that year. And that was a case where just HR just got so mad at being abused by this guy day after day. And to the credit of, by the way, the leadership of that company, what they did was when it came bonus time, they took out about $100,000 of his yearly bonus to send a message to him that he had to calm down. And as I understand it, he calmed down for a couple of years and then he reverted to his old bad behavior. So it didn't work completely.
Yeah. One thing that caught my eye was this study, that a pretty extensive study from the UK, that showed how a-holes can have an effect on your health, on your
heart. So in Europe, there's also Scandinavian studies too, where they will track people over long periods of time, and then they'll have information about their coworkers and their bosses. And essentially, the UK study shows that people who had abusive supervisors had more heart problems and a higher percentage of deaths from abusive supervisors. So literally, if you've got a nasty, incompetent boss, he or she can kill you. So you might get out.
Yeah.
So it can be pretty bad.
Okay, before we head to a break, say something more, if you would, about that. What I think is one of the most intriguing parts of all of this, and that is, as you point out and said earlier, being an asshole can be contagious.
Yeah, so there's two ways in which it's contagious. One is the classic thing they'll do, a little study in the laboratory. Well, they'll have one undergraduate be mean to another undergraduate, and they bring in another one, and it just spreads like a common cold from one to the other. And the second one is in the hiring process. We have evidence that essentially assholes hire other assholes, and even there's some new research that came out since the book, that the kind of asshole you are determines who you want to hire. So if you're a narcissist who just is in love with yourself and just need constant praise, you'll like narcissists. And if you're a Machiavellian person who just loves making other people feel bad, you'd want to hire people like that. So literally, they breed like rabbits, and the disease spreads like the common cold.
Robert Sutton is with us. His book is The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West from KUER. Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. A lot of people want to know, does Doug really read all those books? The answer, yeah, he does. No one really knows how, but we do know that he gets up very early.
If you want to try keeping up with him, you can buy the book by clicking on the Indie Bookstores, Amazon, or Audible links at the bottom of the episode page. If you do, some of the proceeds go to support Radio West. So thanks for that, and thanks for listening.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So here's another chance for me to give you some fair warning about the language in the show today. We're using a strong word during the show. It's kind of a perfect word for what we're talking about, but it may not be to your liking, and it may not be a word you want your kids to hear. So we're giving you a chance to shut off the radio or get the kids out of the room. Maybe that's long enough of a time. As I now read the title of Robert Sutton's book, it's called The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. Before we get to some calls, Professor Sutton, I wanted to talk a little bit about how you diagnose just how bad the problem is. We were talking a little bit about this before, but you have six basic questions. We don't need to go through all of them, but give us a sense of how we diagnose as you call it, the asshole assessment.
The asshole assessment.
Yeah.
Well, some of the things we talked about, how much power do you have versus the other jerks?
Yep.
That's important, whether you're dealing with one or many. Some of the other ones are duration. So it's the classic thing that that people who are in the service business, they might have a bad customer for just 10 or 15 minutes.
Right.
And it's bad, but it's only 10 or 15 minutes. But if you've got somebody like a long-term client or a long-term every day you go in and it's terrible, then in that situation, you probably need to get out. And then there's another thing that I think is important, since we're all different. And regardless of whether we have an objectively nasty or nice boss or whatever, that some of us are more thin-skinned and more sensitive, and we might be in a situation where just being treated badly is making us sick every day. And then there's some people who just seem to have incredible tolerance, you know, not for something like overt sexual harassment or physical attack or something, but who just, it doesn't really bother them that much. And it's kind of funny because I was listening to my wife give advice to a young attorney who was going into an all-male group, a 25-year-old attorney, as my wife had done 35 years earlier.
Yeah.
And my wife said, I think the reason I survived is that stuff doesn't bother me that much. And this young attorney said, yeah, it doesn't really bother me that much either. Some people might not be able to take it so much. So you got to assess how thin or thick skinned you are and how much you're suffering. And for me, the big question, as long as we're not talking about something that's illegal or terrible, but just the usual sort of teasing, being treated as if you're invisible, maybe a little backstabbing, is how much am I suffering and how much is it undermining both my physical and mental health and my ability to do good work? And that's the place to start to decide whether or not to get out, how much to fight back, and so on.
It's almost like determining whether something is an addiction. It may be a problem, it may be an issue, but when it crosses over that line into being something that absolutely has an effect on your life, that's when it seems serious.
Yeah. So one of the people who wrote me, he wrote me about how he worked, and I think he should have gotten out for 7 years in what he called an a-hole factory, and with really abusive boss and coworkers.
Yeah.
And he said, so when I was being nasty to my coworkers, that wasn't such a bad sign. But when I started going home and yelling at my partner, that was a sign it was time to get out.
Right.
And I think that that's consistent with your sort of perspective there.
Logan is with us in Salt Lake City. Logan, welcome.
Thank you. Love the show. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I should have used the code name, but it's a former boss, so it's not like I care that much anymore. But I had this boss once who was, it was like this individual just thrived on making sure that all of us felt like we were doing just enough not to get fired, right? And it was like they embraced that. And I remember in particular, there was this one time, one of my coworkers had a, her husband was from South America, and his parents were in town, and they'd come in for a while because she'd recently had a child and so on and so forth. And they were visiting, and this boss was making us kind of crank through all this stuff that didn't necessarily need to be done, especially with this employee. And she turns to her and she says, my in-laws from South America are in town. They're not here for very long. I'm hoping that I can get out. And this boss turns to her and says, oh, well, lo siento to your in-laws.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Yeah, no, and all of us were just like, no. But what was really amazing is how, you know, we really built like camaraderie as coworkers around this just absolute disdain for this individual, you know. And it wasn't just we all felt like we could do the job better, or we didn't feel like we, you know, it's not that we couldn't deal with the criticism and so on and so forth, but it was just such a hostile environment. But we really banded together and, you know, created some great relationships that I don't even know necessarily we would have created if we hadn't had this one rallying point of individuals. It just was
Robertson,
terrible.
Talk about that idea of camaraderie, because that seems like that is something you deal with in the book.
Yeah. So all the evidence is that if you've got, and by the way, you're lucky you only had one asshole, so that actually helps. You had a common enemy. And even if that person is more powerful than you, if you can band together, it provides emotional support. It provides the ability to cover for one another. And also, I don't know whether this happened in this situation, but it also provides the ability, if you're going to fight back, the more people you have on your side and the more documentation you have, the better shape you are in terms of pushing them out. But even if you're not going to fight back, so Logan, I love this notion that it made us feel better, and sometimes those bonds last a lifetime. It's sort of like prisoners who were in the same stockade in North Vietnam or something are still buddies because they had the guard they all hated. That stuff's very powerful.
Glad you called. Thanks very much. Back to the phones. Tony is with us in Salt Lake. Tony, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I spent a summer accidentally selling Range Rovers after being a ski bum for a season. And the general manager of this car dealership had a dollar sign tattoo on his arm. And all of the other sales managers underneath him were all assholes as well. And they constantly berated people. During the sales meetings, the guy would have thousands of dollars in his pocket and kind of pull out hundreds of, $100 bills and,
Coffee is for closers.
This is what they don't have. So it was the worst experience ever. But it was kind of laughable for me because it wasn't really a career move. It was just something to do for the summer between ski seasons. So anyways, I just thought I would share that. It really was quite comical at times.
Did you get a sense that behavior was rubbing off on the other guys? The contagious part?
So, yeah. Yeah. So all of the salespeople they would just kind of come and go. It was a weird setup. It was called a liner closer store where you would kind of just help people out. Then they would send in these closer people who at times were in drug-induced coma states as they were trying to close these sales. But, yeah, they were all just brutal to each other. And the salespeople, really were cutthroat. It was really laughable. I did make some really good friends out of it, and they've went on, to – have really good careers outside of that business completely.
Yeah. So. What kind of, Robert Sutton, what can you, when you hear stories like that, what kind of insight do you offer?
Well, two things. Actually, I really like Tony's attitude. It's good for him.
Yeah.
There's two things. One is, to me, this is a classic case where you've got contagious asshole behavior on two dimensions. One is treating people like dirt, and the other one is being selfish. So you got both going on. But the other thing that I like that I'm hearing from Tony, which is actually a great coping mechanism, especially if you know it's going to end at some point, is that to start seeing it as funny.
Totally.
And the advantage of starting to see it as funny is that it allows you to sort of look at it like a movie or like somebody else is in it, and also to not take yourself so seriously, and it doesn't hurt as much. So you're sort of reframing yourself as almost like I'm like a character watching a situation comedy. This isn't touching my soul quite so much. So a little bit of humor can go a long way, especially when you know you're not going to be spending the rest of your life doing it.
Right. Tony, thanks. Glad you called.
That was great.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Mike is with us in Salt Lake. Mike, hi.
Hi, Doug. So I'm curious what the advice would be if the asshole's in your family. So I have a brother who's been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. It's incredibly hard to be around, disrespectful to my wife, to my parents. So I feel like I can't really sever that connection because he is my brother. So we kind of have a lifelong bond. So I'm curious the advice in that situation.
Well, this applies, Professor. You say that in some ways it's just for the workplace, but it's also for you can apply these things to your personal life as well.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, in some ways I describe families as above my pay grade.
Right.
But if you look at some of the research on how to cope with somebody you're sort of stuck with, and I bet you, Mike, your caller does some of this. One is do what you can to limit your contact with them as much as possible within what's possible, because the more you have, the more likely things are going to be bad. And then the other thing, and I think it's interesting that you described the narcissistic personality disorder, to the extent you can depersonalize it and say to yourself, although this only works so well, to the extent that you can depersonalize it and you can say, he's a narcissist doing narcissist thing. It isn't about me. This is how he treats everyone. That does help having some distance. But as a final thing, and I don't know if this has happened with him, but most personality disorders of some kind, they can be helped by therapy. So hopefully your brother is getting some therapy of some kind, because the evidence that things like cognitive behavioral therapy for things like narcissistic personality disorder and other problems, it actually can be quite helpful for everybody.
Yeah.
So those are my reactions.
You have a whole chapter on avoidance techniques. Keeping your distance is one of them. One of them that I found absolutely fascinating, and I wanted you to talk about, is slow the rhythm.
Oh, yeah. So one of the things that happens, and it's interesting, I think that we had some of this from one of your earlier callers. There's a certain kind of asshole in particular, the Machiavellian personality, that your pain is their pleasure. They like when you are upset. And if you're in this, especially if you're in a situation like that, doing what you can to slow things down, to literally give them less reinforcement and to allow yourself to have less pain. So some of the tactics from the doctoral student I talk about in the book, but this works in a lot of situations, is if they send you a nasty email, don't respond right away. Wait for 7 or 8 to pile up. And then send one kind of neutral one, or maybe just one to satisfy whatever the request was. Have as few meetings as possible as you can with them. Try to, when they call, literally this doctoral student, her advisor would call to yell at her at 3 o'clock in the morning. Wow. Turn off your phone when you go to sleep so they can't get to you. She started doing all this sort of stuff. And literally you're sort of slowing the rhythm. The other place, I mean, early in my career, I studied telephone bill collectors, the people who call us when we're late in our Visa and MasterCard. And I'd watch the master collectors deal with angry callers. And they kind of liked angry callers. I said, why do you like angry callers? And they'd say, well, you can talk them down and be very calm and let them yell and say, I understand. And the reason they liked angry callers is they were upset enough about the bill. Once you get them to calm down, they'd usually pay. So, so that's what they said, is they have a high, promise to pay rate or something. But the idea of sort of like slowing the rhythm is important. And also, as part of the slowing of the rhythm, to avoid sort of catching the disease, taking little breaks away from them as much as you can, especially with supportive colleagues, and I guess in Mike's case, family members can be helpful too.
Safety zones. You mentioned the cool down room or the nurse's lounge or backstage regions. Finding a spot where you can just no asshole zone, sort of.
A lot of the research, sometimes they call this depletion and stuff. A lot of the research is that when we're as we get tireder and hungrier, we are more likely to suffer more pain from including abusive people. And we're also more likely to snap back. So doing what you can when you start getting fed up to have a place to hide. And where I first saw this, again, earlier in my career is when we studied nurses who are actually subject to repeated sexual harassment. In retrospect, this was 35 years ago. I now realize what was going on. It was male nurses or male doctors harassing female nurses. And they would go into the nurse's lounge. They'd sort of like recover. They'd support each other. And they'd go out again for another operation with these doctors who were pigs. And that's not an ideal coping approach. And I think in the modern era, they would have reported and documented the surgeon's behavior, and they might have had a better chance to fight back. But in those days, their perspective is that that was just doctors being pigs. And the nurses' lounge and taking the breaks was very important for them to engage in some recovery from this really ongoing abuse that they were suffering.
Mm. Carolyn is with us in Lehi, Utah. Carolyn, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I had this situation with the boss, and I played a game. When I was under attack, I would think my pixies, my elves, my angels, my fairies, whatever, are all watching this. And they're hoping I'm going to make it. And they're saying to each other, can she do it? Will she do it? I think she will. I don't know. I don't know. And when I would get in my car at the end of the day, I would think they're all now high-fiving. She made it. She made it. She made it. I learned early on that if I said one word to explain or defend myself, that was just fodder for fuel. And so I put safety pins underneath my shirt at the hem, and I would, when I was under attack, that knee-jerk reaction, but, you know, and I'd grab that safety pin and pinch on it and think, as long as the safety pin is closed, it's not going to do any damage. If you keep your mouth closed, it'll be the same thing. And I made it, and I want to say that that individual and I are now friends.
Wow.
So,
I didn't expect that twist there.
Me neither.
We are now friends. She told me one time, we've never mentioned it, but one time she hooked her arm in my arm and said, I know you're not a huggy person, but I just want to tell you I admire you. And I could tell she was fighting for words. And she said, your ability to not hold grudges. And I thought in my heart, apology accepted.
Hmm. Is there a lesson there, Professor, in that?
Carolyn, there's a lot of lessons there. First of all, I really admire your thick skin. That's really impressive. There's a couple of things going on there. Two I would point out. One is, from the way you're describing it, one way you would get through it was to look forward to the end of the day and say at the end of the day, when I look back and I'll be proud of myself, I made it, or it might not really have been that bad. We call this temporal distancing, the ability when you're in pain now to imagine that you're in the future and looking back on it wasn't so bad. And the other thing, which I would especially emphasize and I really admire you for, and it's hard to do, is forgiveness. Because it's clear that you are forgiving your ex-boss. And the research about forgiveness is honestly whether or not they deserve the forgiveness. The reason that it helps you, and I'm really hearing this in your voice, the reason that it helps you is that way you don't focus on it, you don't think about it all the time, you let it go so that the short-term damage that the person did to you does not follow you around and haunt you the rest of your life. So I really admire and applaud your ability to engage in forgiveness. And I do think that if all of us forgave each other like you did, the world would often be a better place. Although I worry that the bullies get away with it a little bit too much. But for your mental health, I think that's a very wise thing to do.
Well, to that point, bullies getting away with it too much. I'll try to read this comment that comes from Melinda with the sarcasm that she intended.
Okay.
Let me give it a shot. This is just the type of topic that's really needed to better our world. I'm so excited we're putting the time and energy into this. Reality check, it will change nothing, and those who are jerks will not stop, nor will they listen to the show, the ones who need it. You know, they won't listen to it. How do you respond to something like that? I mean, jerks will be jerks, I guess. She's probably right on that score.
Yeah, well, so my perspective is that in terms of any bad behavior, you can just roll over and give up and say there's nothing we can do. But there are examples of organizations where there used to be more widespread abuse that have actually gotten much better. And as a result, they've become more effective. One organization which I would sort of point to is, honestly, I think that Apple got much better after Jobs left, and then he came back and was more civilized would be an example. And so there is hope right now. I don't know whether they're successful, but there's a huge effort at Uber to try to make it a better place, to make it less sexist, and to make it a less hostile work environment. And so to me, and the new CEO is doing that. So to me, I do know of examples where things have gotten better. And then on the other side, in terms of getting out, what I think one advantage of not just me, but a bunch of other academics and experts bringing up this notion of when you're in an environment where people are treating like dirt, if you get out, it can be better for you. There's lots of evidence that if you can't escape, that your physical and mental health will probably improve. It isn't just you. So I do think that it is something that will happen. And when it comes to rudeness or sexual harassment or other sorts of abuse, that we can either just take it and say it's an unsolvable problem, or we can do something about it to try to fight back against it. And the fact there are some workplaces where it's better versus worse, to me, indicates that there's some hope. So the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland is a good example of a very civilized hospital compared to the other ones, and it has a positive effect on employees and patients.
Well, I can see why you get so many comments. I mean, we're getting quite a response. Here's one from Clarissa who writes, "I just quit my job on Monday because of my boss. It was so awful. My hands would start shaking when he got to work. I couldn't speak without getting interrupted. Anxiety drove me to quit." Here's an anonymous one. It says, "My job requires me to work along with someone whose consistently awful behavior has made my working life a living hell. Her toxic behavior has reached into my home life and made me bitter." Here's a little, maybe a little bit of comic relief from Scott, who writes from Logan. He quotes the painter Paul Cézanne, who says, "All of my contemporaries are assholes compared to me."
So that's sort of like being the tallest kid in kindergarten, or what's one of my favorite expressions is cream of the crap, if we can say that.
Yeah.
That he's sort of, I guess that's a defense. It's not much of one, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Rebecca writes, "What's the difference between asshole behavior and harassment?" Yeah, and that's a good question. Like, at what
that's
point are you
question.
Like, sorry, screw that. That's unacceptable. I can't just go find a hiding place in a lounge. I've got to deal with this.
That's a good point. And there is a continuum. Once it starts getting to the point where – we'll get to sexual harassment in a minute – where it's – you feel unsafe, my short answer is that harassment is a subset of asshole behavior. Mm-hmm. But once you start getting to the point where you start feeling physically and mentally unsafe every day, then that to me is where you're sort of getting into the area of harassment. And even there's that kind of person, and I've seen this recently in a workplace I won't mention, where they don't touch you, but they stand too close to you, and they glare at you in the face, and you think they're going to shove you or touch you and don't quite get there. That, to me, is we're starting to get across the – and this is male on male. This is not sexual harassment yet. To me, that's where you're getting to the line of harassment, and that's when I start getting nervous. But that's really, I think, that a good question. It's just a continuum.
One of the chapters you deal with is at what point you fight back, and when it gets so bad that you give the asshole a taste of their own medicine.
Right. So there's two things going on there, and we talk about this. One is, and this is a really important distinction, I think, for listeners and anybody in these situations, that to oversimplify, but it works, I think. There's an important distinction between clueless assholes, people who unintentionally are leaving others feeling bad, because there are many people who do that. Often we're blind to our own weaknesses, versus people who do it because they think that they're getting ahead and it's in their best interests. And so if it's somebody who is doing it unintentionally and means well, having a quiet backstage conversation with them can often change their behavior. I have lots of examples of that, where a sexist CEO is sort of informed by female senior vice presidents that he's interrupting them constantly and not the men. That actually helps. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain kind of jerk, especially Machiavellian jerks, the ones who often they were childhood bullies, that when they're nasty and they see you suffer, their brains light up. If you're dealing with somebody like that, if you can't avoid them, giving them a taste of their own medicine is probably the best solution, because they will see your kindness and your warmth and collaboration as weakness. So if you've got that sort of asshole, you probably want to bite back a little bit.
Back to the phones. Another Mike is with us in Salt Lake. Mike, hi.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
So as many of your callers and all your listeners, I've worked for a number of asshole bosses and other employees that are in charge. And we can skip all the stories and the tales and whatnot. What I would like for Robert to talk about is the correlation between someone being an asshole and how that fuels the ego that is covering up for a deep-rooted unhappiness that really has nothing to do with the individual that is getting the assholeness put onto them.
Right.
And how that person needs to know just to stand strong and understand that it's not them, and don't let their own insecurities get evoked by the asshole.
But Robert, you have a whole chapter dealing with the idea of protecting your soul, and one of the sections is develop sympathy for the devil.
Yeah, so to me, the goal is to find some way so it doesn't hurt so much if you can't change the situation. So one is to have sympathy for the devil, to say that poor person suffers so much that that I just sort of feel sorry for them, and that's one way to emotionally detach. And one thing that that the caller is talking about is this notion of to sort of depersonalize it, is that it's not me, it's a jerk doing jerk things. And another thing that comes out of this caller's comment that is really interesting is that there's different sorts of insecurities and flaws that lead some people to be abusive. And there's a particular kind of jerk I always think is really interesting. And these are people who I call them, researchers call them petty tyrants, people who have a little bit of power over something important, like, I don't know, your budget for lunch. It might be somebody at the DMV who routinely treats everybody like dirt because it's the only power they have in their life over others.
Yeah, yeah.
And people like that, either you can try to bring them down. And sometimes, by the way, showing people who feel unappreciated in life a little bit of love and respect, sometimes you can bring them around to your side and do some good too. So I don't always necessarily think that that assholes are insecure, terrible people who mean to do harm. Sometimes they just need a little love too.
I like how Benjamin Franklin had a way of transforming haters into fans. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so this is a classic, really basic social psychology. What he did was he had somebody who was saying nasty things about him. So a hater, as he called it, as the author called it. And so what Benjamin Franklin did was he started borrowing books from this guy and asking the guy to do favors for him. And it's basic old-fashioned social psychology that if you do favors for somebody, it's really hard for you to hate him,
right,
or to hate them. So this person became a lifetime friend after getting them to do favors. So that's one of the strategies. If you've got a jerk who maybe is changeable, showing them a little love and respect, and even better, getting them to do favors for you is one way to, if you will, flip a hater into a friend.
I knew this question would come up. I'm surprised we didn't get more of it, actually. This comes from Reagan, who writes, without getting too political, how do you think the current, she puts it in quotes, quote-unquote, leadership in this country is influencing the assholes of the world?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't want to get too political either, but I think that when we have role models, and I would say there's bad role models in both parties, who sort of throw dirt, what it does is it sets a standard for that's how we're going to behave. And it kind of lowers, if you will, lowers the bar, and it's a rush to the bottom. Because as we've said, bad behavior is really contagious. And one thing I would say that we haven't talked about is that a lot of this occurs on the web. And there's all sorts of evidence that controlling for how nasty a person you've got on your hands, that when you put them on the web and you do something where there's no eye contact, and even people we know, we tend to be nastier to when we can't look them in the eye when we communicate with them. And so there is really a risk, and this is both in politics and in the workplace, that if you are communicating with somebody, especially over email, or somebody, your listeners would use something like Slack or social media, that you got to be really careful, because you're going to be especially likely to be insensitive and not to have empathy for them. And so we have more and more politics on Twitter and other social media. On average, the same people should be nastier.
I'm going to ask a question for a listener because we're essentially out of time. Lee, if from Kaysville, is worried about the asshole that she's dealing with. She's gone to HR about it. In the corporate world, nothing being done about that. Any sort of quick...
So HR is often not your friend. Sometimes they are your friend. There are some organizations where they really want to root out the jerks, but be very careful with HR. Because, you know, to bring up Fox News, you look at the history or Harvey Weinstein, so we can do both ends of the perspective. HR was not anybody's friend in either one of those situations. So if you go to HR and they're not helping you, I'm not surprised. So be wary. They're often there to protect the boss's interests, not yours. So there are some organizations where that's not true of HR, but be very careful because you can be getting in trouble even though if you don't deserve it.
Robert Sutton, we've heard from a lot of people. You want people to keep sending you stories. Should we put a link to your email address or something?
Yeah, so they can just find it at bobsutton.net or bobsutton@stanford.edu. But bobsutton.net is probably the best place to get to me, if you will. And I do respond to emails.
Yeah.
So
you're a glutton for punishment.
I am.
Yeah. Robert Sutton, his book is The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt, joined us from a studio on the campus of Stanford's campus in California. Professor, thanks very much.
Thanks, Doug. It was great fun.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.